Hello and welcome to the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is John Troopin. I am an editor at Lookout Landing, and I am joined today by our managing editor, our fearless leader, and today our birthday girl, Kate Prusser. Kate, happy Yay! Birthday!
Thanks, John.
Do you have any sort of special routines that you go through? I know that having a birthday on Valentine's Day has to have been a point that you've had sort of hammered in and asked many questions about throughout your life. But are there any special things that you have done throughout the years?
Yeah, Valentine's birthday is really fun in grade school, and then no fun for the rest of your life. So I can imagine that. Yeah, it's not the best. It's not the best day to have a birthday. Would not recommend.
Did you ever have a specific day that you would want to move your birthday to? Like, I know my roommate, he's born on Christmas, which he always liked as double presents, but he also, I think, never really felt like birthdays were all that special because it was sort of the same thing that one time.
Yeah, I always thought it would be kind of fun to have a summer birthday, even though I know that the kids in school who had summer birthdays, remember you'd have like one day where you celebrated all the summer birthdays. That just seemed like a real stinker.
Well, and it would be a real bummer because I don't know if you had this experience, but I remember in elementary school, our principal, Mr. Kimball, would come in on your birthday and he'd bring in a card and you'd get a fancy holographic pencil, which was incredibly exciting.
Oh,
and what are you going to do with that pencil all summer? You're going to forget it. You're going to lose it somewhere. Maybe you were a more studious summer student than I, but I there was no way that pencil was making it back to the fall.
No. I mean, there's no... I don't know if I got one during the school year, though, if I had been lucky enough to receive such a thing. If I am not
my highfalutin Seattle public schools education.
I was gonna say I went to Our Lady of Guadalupe's fallen down on me here. Some I would have expected a little more attention, maybe, out of my 30-person class.
It's
not the best day to have a birthday. I kind of think I would have liked to have one in the summer when. Especially as an adult, it's a little easier to get time off from work and you can kind of gather your friends up together. So generally my friends are very good about celebrating with me on alternate days or like when it's during the week and they weren't going to be doing anything anyway, planning things. And I have kind and lovely friends who are good to me. But yeah, I will say in the general, and this has been like an especially kind of rough birthday week so far, like they forgot to pick up my garbage the other week. My friend broke a glass at trivia last night and a piece of glass flew into my eye. Like, it is not and then I wake up today to the news that last night I see the Ryan Healy Mitch Haniger bro date. They went to Marination, which I love. One of my favorite places to go. And
I was going
to
say, Haniger lives in West Seattle now.
I know. I'm always hoping that I'm going to be like walking around Linkin Park and just run into him and be like, oh, fancy meeting you here.
Well, I was going to say, do they have Wi-Fi at Marination? Because I feel like if you just swing the laptop over there, you can just kind of set up shop and
just wait.
Get some insider interviews.
every off day, just go there and wait for Haniger to make an appearance. No, what I need is I need to like check out West Seattle blog or something and see if there are reports on where he is. Doesn't sound creepy at all. But no, I mean, I watched that and I was like so into it. And I think Ryan Healy has more of a personality than I thought he had.
He was the bubblegum guy. He was.
Yeah, I mean, he in the shaving cream, like he does objectively funny things, I guess. But you look at him and you're not like, well, there's a jokester, right? You know, he kind of looks like a generic athlete model A.
Those big, tall, big tall dudes, you know.
Yeah.
Can't get a laugh out of them.
No, the big shoulders. They're like Buckingham Palace guards, you know that. But he was very personable in it, and when he made no bones about how he was hungry and wanted food immediately, and like was really passionate about getting that taco into his mouth. I related to him on a primeval level. Mm-hmm. And then he talked about, Mitch was like, I don't like desserts. Because of course he was. Because he is kind of a goober and kind of a little bit.
I have never heard anyone say that they don't like desserts.
He said, I hate brownies. Who hates brownies?
Well, you can have bad brownies. You can have, like, dry,
the crumbly brown. Sure. But brownies as a whole, like, it's a food group.
It is. It's on the pyramid. They don't do the pyramid anymore. They do the plate.
The plate. But the brownie is the pedestal that props up the plate. It's under the plate.
You make the plate out of brownie. That's delicious.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, it's like a bread bowl, but
fudgy. Oh my god. I want it now.
My goodness.
But yeah, I thought that was kind of a goobery thing to say, and then Ryan is like, "Well, maybe you'll be a good influence on me, but I love my sweets." Like, all right, I like you. I liked him. Mm-hmm. Between that and the media luncheon, I thought he, or not the media luncheon, you see. Where was he that he was talking?
It was the media luncheon.
It was the media luncheon? Okay. And then he was on the Hot Stove podcast, too, and he was very personable on that. Mm-hmm. And he said something that I think every Pacific Northwesterner relates to. Which is, he talked about the feeling of breathing the air in the Pacific Northwest when you get off the plane. And I think anybody who's lived here a significant amount of time and then gone away and come back knows that feeling, right? Is that something that is... I know every time I got off the plane from Philadelphia, it felt like I was just in an oxygen bar or something. Just pure delight. It was like stepping... What I imagine... stepping onto snow-capped Mount Olympus must have felt like, and just breathing in the air of the gods.
Yeah, it is eminently, especially for, you know, just having been, you know, traveling all over and all of the different places you do go as a professional athlete. It is nice to have some folks that appreciate home.
Yeah. So I've been all in on Ryan Healy, and now I wake up to the news that he has some kind of mysterious hand ailment. Mm-hmm. What is this? Is this going to be last year? Are we in last year again already? Like,
I don't think so.
Okay, talk me down, because like I said, it's been sort of an emotional week. Mm-hmm. The garbage is still sitting out there. Talk me down. Give me some of that Troopin brand middle of the road takes. That's what I need.
All right. So here's where we're at right now. The first base position last year was expected to be Vogelbach and Valencia platooning. That was the expectation going into camp. And it seemed like a reasonable call. It didn't seem, you know, thrilling, but Vogelbach had performed well in the minors. He'd struggled a little bit in his late season call-up, but, you know, still he was a reasonably good hitter. He was defensively limited, but supposedly that's what he'd been working on. And when we saw him coming out, he didn't really look like he'd made that much of an improvement, and we didn't really see him improve that much from what he'd done in the past years this year. You know, he still was a decent hitter. I mean, he was a good hitter, objectively, but just for how good of a hitter he has to be.
Right.
You know,
so in order to offset the complete lack of defensive.
Right.
Yeah.
So this year, you know, and so last year we ended up with Danny Valencia playing a ton and being bad.
So bad. He was so bad.
Yeah. And you know, he's funny because he's one of those guys. If you just want to look at WAR, you know, you get a sort of mixed evaluation on him, because I think Fangraphs had him at -1 and Baseball Reference had him at 1 in the positive. So that's basically a 2-win swing. it's the difference between being one of the worst players in baseball and, you know, a player that shouldn't be starting but is fine. That's not what we have this year. You know, this year you have similarities, and it could have been the result, and it still could be the result, because Healy has, frankly, a lot of Valencia-esque characteristics. You know, he demolishes lefties. He's struggled against righties. But he is also 6 years, 7 years younger than Valencia. Mm-hmm. This will be his second full season and third real season of baseball. And they're not asking him to play really, a defensive position that he wasn't comfortable with. Now, behind that, you also have Mike Ford, who has absolutely obliterated the baseball at every level that he's played so far, up to and through AAA. And that's Mike Ford, who is a Rule 5 draft pick, who, if the Mariners don't put on their opening day roster, then they have to return to the Yankees. So, you know, there's sort of a little extra incentive there to keep him. But
unless they can work out some kind of a deal, right? Like, they could theoretically send the Yankees some international signing bonus money, which is what I thought would be the least painful way of doing it. But
right. And that's not an uncommon thing. Like, that's a thing that happens a fair amount with Rule 5 picks is, you know, a player... You know, a team really likes a player. They pick him in the Rule 5 draft. They can't quite fit him in their roster, but they want to keep him, so they pay the other team, you know, the guy's original team, to keep him.
They pay him. They can just pay, or sometimes a low-level trade happens.
Right.
But the important thing to realize, too, is we don't always think of teams as being altruistic, although we have seen some of that behavior with, like, the Cardinals prioritizing the A's as a trade partner in the Piscotty trade, for example.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have wiggled a better trade package out of somewhere else, but they did, and they said that letting him be closer to his mom, who's recently diagnosed with ALS, did play a role. So teams don't want to act poorly towards their players. That's not a good way to get people to want to come to your team.
Right.
So a lot of times with Rule 5, where the guy is blocked anyway, another team selects him. For whatever reason, they get offered back. The first team often declines that because they know that they didn't have a path for that player. And obviously, there's no path for Mike Ford in New York, right? I mean, he's totally blocked at first base.
Yeah. They got Greg Bird. They got Garrett Cooper. They have a reasonable number of lumbering power guys, and especially if they're looking to upgrade at third base, they might also have more to do there, especially with Andujar, who should be good at third.
That's the other thing, is they're gonna have to shift some guys over probably because they've got there's Hicks out in the outfield.
Yeah.
Maybe that pushes Ellsbury somewhere. I mean, they've got more guys there than they know what to do with.
Which is how Ford ended up being a Mariner, because the Yankees had so many people that they couldn't protect the guys that were actually also good.
In the Rule 5.
Right.
So
so that's how the Mariners ended up with Ford. That's also why a guy like Nick Rumbelow, who would have probably been up in the majors last year for most teams, just kind of hung out in AAA last year for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we're drifting a little far afield, but the point being, it's definitely plausible that the production falls flat again this year, but the guys that you're looking for to get that production are guys who are on the upswing of their career, as opposed to someone like Valencia, who pretty much is what he is, if not getting worse.
Right.
And so
I would like to return to something about Ryan Healy, too, which is, Do you know how many innings at third base Ryan Healy played last year? If you wanted to just hazard a guess.
I don't do a great job with innings, but I just like the innings measure multiplication. Let's say 150.
260.
Oh, wow.
So, which is, I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to gotcha on that, but that was that was way more than I thought it was going to be.
Well,
because
he played a lot of DH. He played a little bit of first base.
300 innings worth of first, so yeah. More. But guess how many innings he played at third base in 2016?
A whole lot.
Yes, all of them. He played He played not at all at first base in 2016.
And so, I do recall, because I explicitly remember watching him miss baseballs and throw baseballs.
He was bad. He was really bad at third base. He is not a good everyday third baseman. I think that they could stick him out there in like a desperation scenario.
Which I think
like
was
Kyle
also
Seager.
True of Valencia.
Yes. Who maybe was a little more capable? I don't know.
Probably a little bit more. Especially at this age.
But. Yeah. But, so he's passable at third if you need him for a game and you want his bat in the lineup. But I wonder how much... So we've been talking about Ryan Healy, first baseman, when I think it's important to remember Ryan Healy is 300 innings of first baseman from last year. He's still in the transition to that position. And I wonder how much not having to worry about defense. I could see it two ways, and I'm curious what you think is going to – what you think might act upon him more strongly. Is it going to be less pressure not having to worry about his abysmal defense at third base? Or is he still transitioning to the defensive challenges of first base?
I would lean towards the former. I think it's going to be less pressure. I believe when he was on the hot stove, he mentioned that he actually, you know, most guys who transition to first base start their careers at a more premium defensive position. You know, you have guys like DJ Peterson, is someone that I think a lot of Mariners fans are familiar with, who started as a third baseman, but there were always questions about him defensively, and he ended up switching to first because he couldn't quite hang. Healy was a first baseman for most of the time in the minors that he worked, and I think only later in his upper minors time was he switched to third. So, you know, I think throughout high school, throughout college, he was mostly a first baseman. So I think he's pretty comfortable with that. And I mean, it's not like it's a true comparison really, but as someone who played a lot of first base and felt pretty comfortable there, other than the distance that the ball is traveling to you, there are next to no similarities between playing first and third base. So, I think it's definitely, you know, when you're just able to focus your time on learning hitting and practicing that, I think that'll be valuable. I have a question for you then about Healy and maybe the fit there with Ford and even Vogelbach. So last year there was supposed to be a platoon. The year before that we had Adam Lind and Deho Lee. I think the year before that we might... What was it the year before that in 2015? Was it still Kendrys then? Or no, that was 2015 was still Lomo.
Jesus Montero?
Lomo and Jesus and Smoke.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, the point being, we've had a lot of experience with platoons, and I think that has not gone well. and there's a reason platoons are kind of scoffed at and not ideal, is because you're using a roster spot on, you know, a guy who is clearly limited, and so limited that you're having to bring another dude to cover for that. But even beyond that, you know, when you do it at first base, you're essentially having one bench spot taken up by a pinch hitter. But with that in mind, Healy has such a great offensive numbers against lefties. And I think from what I've seen from scouts, there's a pretty strong belief that Ford at least would be capable of handling himself against righties, but mm-hmm. might struggle against lefties. Do you think there's a chance that we see a platoon on opening day? Even if Healy comes back and is totally fine and his hand is all right and he just stubbed it, reaching for
hand.
Reaching for some extra cheesecake. I don't know.
So at the beginning of the year, I think that we'll see an extra position player just because they might start with a 7-man bullpen to begin, while they kind of suss that extra spot out as far as who it's going to be. And it doesn't sound like Zick is. It sounds like he's a little behind. Had some off-season injury issues, as he is kind of wont to do, which makes me really nervous about him. Seems to be minor. I think it was described as inflammation, right? Shoulder inflammation, yeah. Something like that. But you know, we're friends with shoulder inflammation.
Yeah, it's soggy and inflamed.
Soggy and flamey is not our friend.
Not our jam.
No. So I have some questions about what is going to go on in the and we're getting so many pieces that we don't know as well that maybe they're going to want to take a longer look at how Nick Rumbelow does in AAA before giving him a roster spot. I don't know. But I could see that if Ford goes out and just like knocks their socks off in spring training, because they do seem to make some decisions based on how guys perform in the spring. Like Vogelback tanked last year in his second half of the spring and all of a sudden went from being clear-cut favorite for the first base job, or at least for a platoon position, to being relegated to the minors, which seems like a pretty quick... And I know that a lot of people were concerned about that. Like, why are they paying so much attention to spring training numbers? And I think that some of the conversations we've had with prospects have led me to understand that, well, they have this check sheet that they're looking for. They have specific targeted goals. And if you're not hitting those or you're not progressing towards those, you find yourself persona non grata pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does seem like an organization that the expectations are fairly clear, which is good.
The expectations are clear, and the expectation is that you will learn and you will get better and you will progress, and that these are... And they're not asking you to do things. This was what Lindsay Coggle was saying when we had him on the pod. They're not asking you, if you are like a lower 90s guy, to suddenly start throwing in the upper 90s. Like, they're not asking you to do things that are physically impossible. They're asking you to control things that are controllable. Put the ball in the zone. Put the ball here. Throw this pitch this way. Increase this spin rate. You know, they have manageable targets, I think, or things that they think are within the player's ken. So
I think the point about taking spring training numbers into account is an interesting one. I know Jesse Smith, who's the director of analytics for the Mariners, has talked a little bit about how some numbers, you know, I think it is true that a lot of numbers that you see in spring training are bunk, or at least are not
noise.
Reliable.
They're
indicators.
Noise.
Yes, yeah. I think that's a good way to describe it. But how there are some things that you can find that are valuable. And so things like, pitch characteristics. You can see velocity will be indicative. You know, you can see movement like that. Those things are pretty quickly, indicative of something. Oh, has something changed in this player? Have they improved in some way, or have they changed something here? And plate discipline numbers as well. Just because players have such clear control over that as in terms of a process. You know, if you're maybe not necessarily facing, you know, if you're a starter, or if you're Robinson Cano, and you're facing, you know, in the first inning, you're facing Cole Hamels. And then in, you know, your second at bat, you're facing, you know, the Rangers' fourth double A reliever. You know, it's yeah. a very different
some guy thing wearing to get. Like a number in the '80s.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and so it's like that's not a great measure of value, but you'd still see the same process in terms of what are guys doing.
I think that that's a good rule of thumb for anyone who's wanting to watch spring training and wonder, you know, if there's anything to take away from this. Consider the things that are controllable by so the pitcher can control how to some degree how hard, how fast, where he's locating his pitches. The batter can control whether or not they're swinging at those pitches.
Right.
They cannot control so much what happens once the baseball comes off the bat, right?
Right. And that's, you know, I mean, that in large part is baseball, you know, that's... Yeah, that's yeah, true. And true. So,
but that's where you get things like, you know, the Arizona environment and guys who are maybe playing out of position and, you know, something that would be easily caught maybe hopefully during the regular season becomes like a bloop double, sun doubles, all of that.
You're gonna see higher offensive numbers no matter what.
It's sort of like, but the other thing Carson Cistulli wrote on FanGraphs about taking statistics from the Arizona Fall League, which I think is very similar, and found that strikeouts from the AFL correlate to strikeout rates in the majors. So that's another thing to look at. And as far as you're looking at what can be controlled, that's if Nick Rumbelow comes out and strikes out a bunch of guys, I'm going to feel really, really good about that trade, even though, you know, of course, pour one out for our boy JP.
JP Sears.
Oh, I know. I know.
I know.
It's a hard trade to swallow. So.
So I just to wrap it up around the platooning possibility.
Yes.
Before we look forward into our sort of what we're expecting to see, what we're hoping to see, what we need to see section in spring training. I would be, before we got this news about Healy, I was hoping that we would start the season with a platoon, in large part because if you want to get a sort of soft landing, I guess, for Ford, who I do think is the best first base option that the Mariners have right now. Personally, even though I think there's interesting stuff about Healy, there's still an interesting player somewhere in Vogelbach, but I do think by the numbers and by the, you know,
you prefer Mike Ford to Ryan Healy.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Say more about that.
Okay, so, since you asked...
That's teacher code for, I don't know about this answer, but...
Well, so, I mean, the tough part is that... I mean, not the tough part. The clear defense or counter-argument is Mike Ford has zero plate appearances in the major leagues, and Ryan Healy has... about a season and a half of them. And while they haven't been exceptional, you know, Ryan Healy's been a fine offensive hitter. He's been an above average hitter. He's had 110 WRC plus. He's had, you know, 38 home runs. He's had pretty good numbers across the board. Other than his walk
rate. I was just going to say.
You know, and if you assume that he's a reasonable defensive first baseman, then I think you can look at it and say, okay, this guy will be okay. He, I think, is just a little, you know, effectively he and Mike Ford are the same age. Mike Ford's 25. He's half a year younger than Ryan Healy, who just turned 26. But Mike Ford has absolutely destroyed the ball at every single level in the minor leagues. He has not run a walk rate under 12% in any level of the minors that he had more than, like, I guess there was one year he had 52 plate appearances in high A and had a 7% or 7.7%, and beyond that, he has had a 12% or higher. Last year he was walking 15% and 18% in the minors, or in double A. I mean, this is essentially the type of guy who it's completely outrageous to say that he has anything Joey Votto-like in terms of his performance, in part because Joey Votto is an exceptional defensive player and also, you know, probably a Hall of Fame worthy player in general, and also started his career in Double A and was in the majors the next year.
Love to play for the Reds.
Yeah, love to play for the Reds in 2004 or 2006.
Mike Leake, I think, was 2008 or 2010, and he no minor leagues
that's
at
true.
All. Never
that's
minor
true.
Leagues.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. No, yeah. they're speedsters, but. Essentially, Ford has power. He didn't show a ton of power in the low minors, which was a major concern, and which is why I think it took a long time for him to develop. But he got stronger. He adjusted his swing, and he has combined that exceptional walk rate. Where I mean, in Double A last year, he walked 5% more than he struck out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, it's nuts. I mean,
when you're talking about these low A power numbers to the higher minors, that jump is. I mean, he's slugging 440 in 2014 in A.
Yeah, in single A.
And then you usually see guys lose power as they go up through, and
right.
all of a sudden in 2017,
or maybe hopefully maintain it.
Yeah,
know,
or you're... maintain it. So he's adding and then maintaining as he hits the higher,
the higher minors, exactly.
Yes.
And so, I mean, when you watch Ford, you know, it doesn't look, you know, he's not huge. He's 6 foot, 225. I mean, part of the reason he's been such an underlooked guy is because. I mean, there's a couple reasons. One, he's not physically imposing.
Yeah, that is
Two,
one thing that Healy has on Ford easily.
Yeah.
It's five American inches.
Uh-huh. Exactly. You know, I mean, Healy looks massive.
He
he's
looks like a power
incredibly
hitter.
Strong.
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, I think he's a reasonably player. But, you know, Ford was a guy who played in the Ivy League, you know, went to Princeton, was undrafted.
Mm-hmm.
Just always hit at every level. Kate, you and I have talked about this as sort of when you see guys who are, when you look back at guys who ultimately are successful, and see the reasons that they were cast aside. There were consistent reasons, and sometimes those reasons are the case, but I think often those outliers, are the guys who just kept succeeding at every level.
Right.
And the only knock that anyone ever had on them was the same, was, oh, well, they're too small, or, oh,
that's
well, they haven't done it. Yeah, and exactly. And so...
Or sometimes, oh, we've already got a guy who's doing that at the big league
exactly.
level, which was the Mariners' reason for keeping Edgar in the minors until he was, like, practically 30.
Exactly. And so it's... I am very enthusiastic about Mike Ford. I love his profile as a player. He's not very fast. He's not a great defender, but he's a first baseman. You can't be that bad defensively at first base. Like, yeah, and we have obviously talked about Vogelbach, but like, there's only so much that you can really do that's bad, and I don't think he's abysmal.
Yeah.
And if you can be in this lineup and just be on base a lot, I mean, you want to be on base a lot in a lineup with the amount of power that this team has. You know, you want to be on base in front of Mike Zunino, especially if you're slow, because
He's just gonna send the ball over the fence.
he's gonna send it over. Exactly. I mean, like, it's a very good fit, and I think the Mariners have done something interesting in targeting a lot of guys who are high contact guys, you know, who are guys who put the ball in play a lot, which are sort of have fallen out of favor recently, and I think that is for good reason, because those guys were overvalued for a long time, and guys who walked and guys who had high on base percentages were undervalued. But
And that's another way where Healy and Ford are interesting platoon partners, right? Because one has good on-base skills and the other has good power. So, I mean, theoretically, they could even, if there was a space for both of them, they could both exist in the lineup. But why can't you just play one more base, Mike Ford?
Exactly.
Play one more position.
I mean, stick him out there. If D. Gordon ends up working out, you can put him out there in outfield. The Rangers are playing Willie Calhoun, who is an animate one of those bricks from the Mario or from the Mario games that drops down. Like he's what Kirby turns into when you hit down B in Super Smash Bros. And they're playing him in left field. So I don't see
Yeah,
any
but we don't
reason.
want to do anything like the Rangers right
That's
now.
fair. Anyways, so yeah, I think this is a bummer because Ryan Healy could be interesting, and especially with the amount that they've been you know, working his progression. If he's waylaid right now, that's a bummer. But he has a minor league option, at least one, I think. Well, at least one I know, maybe multiple, but I think just the one. But you know, he can take his time because Mike Ford is here,
Yeah.
and
And I mean, what is spring training for if not for getting a good look at some guys? And, you know, we could use
yes.
a good look at everybody else is kind of locked in. So it's a good time to get a good look at Mike Ford and see if Dan Vogelbach comes, steps up his game.
Hey, some it's time for a change.
Did he not
It's
make a,
time for
did
a
he make a
change.
swing change? Somebody said
Isn't
he
that
made
what
a
he said?
swing.
He posted like an
Oh,
Instagram, right?
well.
not to make this too much of what we actually do, which is look half the time just looking through in, you know, social media feeds and finding like little tidbits. But I believe that was the video he posted of him working a more uppercut kind of swing.
With the largest bat known to humankind,
With
the
Babe
biggest,
Ruth's bat.
literally, actually, Babe Ruth's bat.
The 43-inch, 45-ounce club of Samson.
Mjolnir.
Oh, my goodness. So, to move on, you know, we have talked, I think, about one of the most, I guess, one of the positions, one of the only positions that's really unsettled going into spring training. What, if anything, is there a specific position, is there a specific player that you most want to see, and that you most need to see something from as spring training starts? Is there something in particular you'll be looking for?
I need to see D. Gordon in center field. That is primarily it because a lot of this hinges on him not being a disaster out there. And I don't think he will be. And I finally caught up with last week's Hot Stove show and listened to Chris Prieto talk about, you know, he gave what I thought was a pretty good scouting report on Gordon, which is that in center field, you just have to, everything's in front of you. So that's where speed is the most important asset. And he's got that. And he's got good instincts to the ball. And all of that made me feel good. One thing that is not being talked about anywhere is his arm strength.
I think it's been generally regarded as fine.
Fine, yes, but fine for an infielder is very different from fine for.
Right. Well, I mean, we'll see, right? He just learned how to crow hop. I mean,
Yeah.
He didn't find never thrown that way.
There's that too. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, with the, you don't have to be, I think, quite as, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but accuracy matters a little less when you're throwing in from the outfield. You still want to be accurate, but you don't have to be maybe quite as pinpoint as a...
You want to throw long line drives.
Yes.
Basically.
So perhaps, but he's so small.
Yeah.
He's very small. And, you know, your center fielders are usually around the 6 foot variety. So,
he's more the Kenny Lofton, Kevin Kiermaier, like maybe Kevin Pillar.
Pillar. Okay.
I guess I always think of Kevin Kiermaier as being small, but I don't actually know. He might
be big. I think he's like 6. I can look this up. I think he's over 6 feet.
I would be able to look it up if I could spell Kiermaier. But
for some reason, that is one of the ones. He's 6. He's 6'1".
Okay. So. All right.
Not a tiny guy. Okay. He's just so agile at climbing up things that you think he's smaller than he is, like a toddler.
That's fair. I think I'm very much looking for. I remember explicitly, like, the first few games. And D. Gordon's not tiny. Like, he's 5'10", 5'11". But I remember explicitly last year when the defensive transition was so new for us, you know, when we were just coming off of Franklin Gutierrez and
Seth Smith,
and
Nelson Cruz,
still a lot of Nelson Cruz in the outfield, you know, and having Leonis, which was great, but not much else defensively out there, and the just the difference in what was landing and what was caught and what was a single versus what was cut off in the gap and kept to, or what was a double that was turned into a single.
So that was interesting, right? Because that was Leonis Martin, who is elite, flanked by two slow guys. Mm-hmm. And now we're going for two above average speed / arm. I mean, I think between the various collection of tools between Haniger and Gamel, you could call them both average or above average, right?
I think, around average to above average.
Yeah, is flanking, something that in my mind I think of as just a big red question mark. That is, whenever I try to picture D. Gordon...
Quickly moving question mark.
Quickly moving big red question mark is what I see in my mind's eye when I try to picture it. Because I can't picture it. Even with the, like, sort of grainy Instagram things we've gotten, it is really, I can't see it yet. I want to see it. That's my number one thing I would like to see in spring training.
I think definitely the D. Gordon defense is going to be interesting. I wish that there was a position that I was really curious about, but I don't think there's anything that we need to see proven at any other position other than center field and first base. You know, I think... It would be good to see another hot start from Ben Gamel. It would be good if Guillermo Heredia was healthy and able to be going. You know, I don't know if that'll quite be the case.
Although the report we got today sounded optimistic.
Yes. I just don't know how much that translates into in terms of him playing in games in spring training. But I need to see pitching, you know? I think Kyle Seager is going to... You know, nothing about spring training is going to change my thoughts on Mitch Haniger or Kyle Seager or Gene Segura or Robinson Cano or Mike Zunino's abilities, because they've done enough to show that all I need to see from them is better stuff in the regular season. You know, I don't need to see Nelson Cruz light it up in spring training. I think... I would like to see Nelson Cruz hang out and just, you know,
totally. I would prefer to see him not light it up. I would like to see him in a dark, cool, safe space.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, I want to see the pitchers. I want to see Felix. I want to see you know, Felix on his new sort of, I mean, not new, but on the normal routine that everyone has always, or not, you know, that most
that everyone
do.
But Felix has a deal,
yeah,
too, yeah.
Basically. You know, I want to see Paxton looking healthy, but even then, you know, it's like, I know Paxton's going to be good if he's out there. I don't, like, he doesn't need to prove anything in spring training. He needs to throw a couple innings, make sure, you know, he feels good, and that's it. You know, but what I want to see is, how does Andrew Moore look?
Yep.
How does Marco Gonzalez look?
Yep.
You know, how does Ariel Miranda look? How does, I mean, Erasmo look? You know, how do these guys who are fringy right now, for making the roster, and fringy in terms of what their production projects to, you know, how have they improved in the offseason? I want to see, you know, Max Posey. I want to see, you know, these guys who, if they have taken a big step forward, that's going to be what separates this team, you know.
And conveniently, pitching is, as we talked about, one of the metrics that you can look at in spring training and get some,
right,
that there's not noise in there.
And not the results, because the results,
right,
will still be noisy because it's,
right,
Arizona, and because this is the first that they're pitching, and because guys are working often, you know, they're often working their specific plans as opposed to game planning for hitters,
mm-hmm,
you know. But
you can look at velocity. You can watch for location. I mean, we've talked a little bit about
mechanics.
Yeah. When we had Andrew Moore on, he talked a little bit about getting more depth and fade, mm-hmm, on his changeup, and we can be,
yeah,
looking for those things.
Yeah.
We will always keep the memory of Chris Heston and and, God,
and Dylan Overton.
Dylan Overton, yes. I tried to call him Dylan Unsworth, who is a different guy who's not in our organization anymore.
Yeah,
Dylan, we will keep those things in mind. Although, honestly, there were warning flags. There were warning signs there. Heston had a lot of trouble keeping that ball.
I'm going to say there were warning signs with Chris Heston a while ago. I love you, Ken. You have made some good calls. I did not understand your belief in Chris Heston.
I really thought he was going to just come back. I just really thought he was going to. He'd been working with Stoudemire. He said all,
absolutely,
the right things. He just was not able to execute,
yeah,
them.
Hey,
but he
I
had
thought,
a good plan. He just couldn't,
that's
execute,
true,
it.
That's fair. I mean, I thought Dylan Overton's cutter was interesting. I thought if he could work it a little bit, you know, he'd be there. But dude could not handle it.
Again,
the story
of 2017, everyone hitting their worst percentile outcomes. Like,
yeah,
just not, did not catch a single break on a single one of those guys,
right,
actively figuring anything out.
Yep.
That was taken up by Lindsey Coggle, who was toiling away in our minor leagues, who figured something out midseason. Like, he got the breakthrough, but he was,
mm-hmm,
down in Double A, where it didn't help us out.
It was Lindsey Coggle, it was Braden Bishop,
yeah,
it was Ian Miller,
yeah,
and
yeah, it was a lot of
Emilio Pagan.
Yeah, a lot of, oh, Emilio. But no, I think what you're talking about is what everyone is going to have a really hard eye on. And unfortunately, I think it might be a lot of people who, because everyone wants to see these starters prove that they deserve the innings that Jerry has said that they have to be given. You know, we don't,
mm-hmm,
with the perception that we don't have innings to give to one of the starters that's still out there on the free agent market. The pressure is on them to prove,
mm,
that they deserve those innings. And I think that will be a good thing. And that will also maybe be a tough thing if, like you said, people pay too much attention to the results and, you know, not the process.
Right.
I'm preparing for a lot of spring training reactionary tweets is what I'm saying. Like, I feel like if Andrew Moore, if Marco, I think the cog to all of this is Marco, because people are mad,
yeah,
that we gave up Tyler O'Neill for him. They still feel that's an overpay.
Yeah.
This is, you know, he's older. Andrew Moore is 23. Like, Andrew Moore has time to figure stuff out. 24,
yeah,
now?
I think he turns 24 in a little,
yeah,
bit.
His birthday is March? March. I thought it was June. Yeah, it's June. Yeah.
Well, do we know when?
Yeah, it is. It is June. It is June. I did do that Sporkle Mariner's birthday quizzes, and his was the only one I got right. That's why I know that. There's time for Andrew Moore. Ariel Miranda, you know, I think expectations are pretty low for him after this past year. And he hasn't been discussed as much as a huge part of the plan. A lot of this falls on Marco. No. Well, ideally, if Marco is as advertised. So I feel like there's going to be a lot. If he goes out and has a bad start, I fear Twitter.
I'm actually specifically on Marco. We talked a little bit within Slack, and I'm going to write up a piece since I think he's made some mechanical changes, since coming to Seattle, and you know, obviously his velocity was ticking upwards at the end of the season. So there are some definite interesting things to look for on him, but I think it's still, it's still bizarre that the team's response has been so doggedly, we're fine with the rotation and we need to make space this year for these guys.
Because people are not happy about that.
Right. And I think, the idea is there's merit in the idea, right? If you're able to get quality production from younger guys, that's how teams have been successful lately. I mean, because those are the players that are being paid less. So if you're getting a lot of production from the guys that you're not paying very much, you have more money to, you're able to spend money to fill in your holes elsewhere. And the Mariners have sort of done that in reverse. They have spent money and have production from the guys they're paying for, and now over the past basically 2 or 3 years, they've tried to fill in production from guys who were rookies or second-year players or, needed a small tweak, and sometimes that's worked. Guys like James Pazos and guys like Machaniger and Gamel and Heredia last year, and sometimes that hasn't with, Vogelbach and... I think a number of the starting pitchers last year who they were hoping would work out. And so it's a lot of those same guys, and a lot of those same guys still have the chance to be good because this things that possibly would have made them good last year are still there, but they need to make an adjustment. And so, I really looking forward to that first Marco Gonzalez start, I guess, and seeing how the changeup looks, seeing how the fastball looks, and I still think that we see a move before the off season ends. I guess before spring training ends. At this point, it's not technically the off season anymore.
No. Are you still on the Jaime Garcia train?
I am still on the Jaime Garcia train.
Still the conductor of that train?
Yes. I still think Jaime Garcia is a good fit because I think that allows you to move Erasmo or Marco if you want to the bullpen. I would rather see Marco stretched out to start. This I don't remember if I've gone into this on the podcast, but I think it's a good fit to move Zepchinski, or if you just really can't get anything on him, just kind of let him go, because not because he's bad, but because for what the Mariners need, he doesn't fit. In terms of you can't, if you're needing a lot of long relief and a lot of guys who are versatile in the bullpen, you can't just have one spot dedicated to a player who can't be sent down to the minors and can only pitch to left-handers and wasn't even that dominant against lefties in that role.
It was a bad role for him. It was a bad ask for him last year, because I don't You know, he's not, he is very good at going in and throwing his like three pitches to a left-handed batter generally. But you saw as he was asked to do more, his production tailed off.
And significantly, yeah. And
a Zepchinski, teams... when utilized properly, is fine.
Right. He's absolutely, I think, still a valuable player in that role, but I think the Mariners are in a place where they need something, they need other things more than they need a guy to do that role well.
Yeah.
And there's like three or four teams sniffing around Tony Watson, who is pretty much the same player. I guess the Phillies, the Dodgers, and the Red Sox,
at least. Yeah.
You know, all are looking at a 32-year-old lefty-only pitcher, you know, who can do a little bit more than relieve, you know, just against lefties, but mostly should only be left-handed against lefties. You know, whatever you can do, I think you move Zepchinski and you open up a spot for either Erasmo or, you know, Marco, or even just one of the other guys, whoever it might be, and then just get one more starting pitcher. Someone's going to get hurt, and if no one gets hurt, then it's a much better problem to have of trying to fit in your decent starting pitchers than not having enough of them.
Yeah, I like Zepchinski on a personal level, and I thought he fought hard last year against a role he was miscast for. But I agree with you. I'm not sure that that's a great fit for us right now with Bazos. Like you said, there absolutely has to be a lefty. And the Giants are mindful of being under the luxury tax and would really like a left-hander and are seriously considering giving Tony Watson a lot of money. So surely something can be worked out, right? Where we can just pay some of the money and get one of their little middling prospects back. Right.
Exactly.
That would be fine. And, you know, I mean, we're just two dummies with a podcast, so I know that DePoto is, you know, firing those phones off at all hours. I'm very curious. This is one thing where the Mariners, it is always delightful to me when my phone lights up and it's a Mariners trade or acquisition and I have heard nothing about it, like nothing, which is, I feel like that Ketel Marte, Taijuan Walker, Segura Haniger thing, I was shocked. Because it just seems like they do a really good job on keeping a lid on everything.
It is a remarkably leak-free environment.
It is. I wonder what, like, does Jerry have compromising photos of all his staff? Or, like, what is the... what is...
For a guy who loves to talk so much, he does seem to manage to play the final things pretty close to the chest.
It's pretty amazing how little... I would have to think that the Mariners are one of the most leak-free. And the things that we do hear that are leaks are false, like Lucas Duda.
Well, and I think part of that was there was a note, and I think Divish may have written about it, but he asked because I think there was it was like the Jay Bruce rumors that we saw.
Yes, yeah.
Like, there's no way. DePoto said, yeah, you'll probably see us linked to a bunch of players always, but that's just because we always ask almost everyone about what they're looking for to try and get a sense of where the market's at, which I thought was interesting. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's just people making up stuff, but it does seem like there are some things that are like, I guess I could see that, you know, like the John Jay thing, and then you know, the Jay Bruce, the, you know, various other people, or it's just
JD Martinez. That was I am just laughing over that one because generally when I hear a name linked to us that is immediately I just cross that person off my list as somebody who I think we would actually get, because it seems like a negative confirmation. Which is why I've been happy we haven't been linked to any of the free agent starting pitchers. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe. I just keep hope alive. But yeah, that's... I forgot what we were talking about. Leak-free environment. Mm-hmm. Zipchinski. Maybe there's Mike. Something. Maybe there's something brewing that we just don't know about.
I mean, yeah, we and I've heard, and I think we do know that they have tried to move, and they've been looking to move Zipchinski. Mm-hmm. So, it's not a.
But weird how that hasn't popped up in any of like the MLB trade rumor sites or anything. Like, I don't see. We know that from internal sources, but
right,
that's not something that I've seen. In reported in the media, so
that's because we haven't been leaking, Kate.
I know. I hope this doesn't count. Oh God, please don't come after me, Jerry.
Yeah.
If the podcast doesn't air again next week, guys, yeah. And if you don't hear from me or John, yeah. Please come find us down in the Mariners gulag, deep beneath Safeco Field.
We'll be stuffed into Jerry's backyard pizza oven. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Let's go to your sunshine and rainbows gulag in the depths of Safeco Field. Certainly, just it's weirdly directly underneath the kids' zone.
I was gonna say it's under first base, and that's why it's just
there. You go. Ryan hurt his hand reaching down to try and help someone out, and he burned.
No, can't do that. Can't do that.
No, they stay down there forever.
Or just turning the giant wheels. You think it's all that complicated machinery on the roof that moves it back and forth, but no, it's just a few people down in the gulag with one of those big wooden wheels. All right, well, this took a super dark turn. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Sorry about that. On that note, yeah.
Are you going to ask me which Mariner I'd want to be my Valentine? Because I don't know how I can pick. Just kidding. It's Mike Marjama.
Who did an interview with our own Isabel Manassian, that you can read on the site if you'd like.
It was very delightful.
Yeah. He talked about, although I don't think she wrote it in. I don't think she could.
No, this is a little bonus content.
But apparently they were riding on the bus between cities heading to another game, and his manager mentioned that he'd bought a fighting chicken, and Marjama was like, "No, you didn't. No, you didn't." He's like, "Yeah, well, of course I did. No, you didn't." And so the manager goes down, reaches up, into the sort of space above, you know, where the storage goes, and pulls down a big paper bag with holes cut in it, and hands it to Marjama. And Marjama says, "What is this? That's my fighting chicken."
He put it in the bag, sure enough, so it would go to sleep.
Yeah. So, nice sleepy chicken. With questionable, nice sleepy chicken. Questionable,
questionable future. With a questionable future, yeah.
Even a more questionable past.
Something we don't want to think too much about.
Perhaps.
So
yeah,
now we've covered gulags being incinerated in Jerry's pizza oven. Yeah, it is all hearts and rainbows here on the Lookout Landing podcast.
We're the yeah. Oh, we're like, I don't know. Did you guys have Valentine's Day dances at your school?
Sorry, I just got excited. The garbage truck is here.
There you go. It's all turning around.
The garbage truck is here, and it still didn't take the garbage.
Uh-oh. Do you need to run after them?
Oh, they're gone now. Oh. All right. I'm sorry. What were you saying? You can cut all of that out. I want to go out and check the status of the garbage, but.
Okay. Oh, well, I was going to ask if your school, when you were growing up, ever had, like, Valentine's Day dances?
No.
Or anything of that nature?
No. No, didn't do
But
that.
I'm guessing Our Lady of
No, the Catholic
Guadalupe
school
was not.
didn't do that. I mean, no. No, there was like maybe an end of the year
I'm
thing.
perhaps playing my, showing my hand in my lack of understanding of Catholic school.
Yeah, not a. I mean, there was Saint Day where you got to dress up like your patron saint, but there was no Valentine's Day dance.
Now, who was your patron saint, and how is that determined?
It's who you're named after. So, Saint Catherine of Siena.
Oh,
Yeah.
man.
Yeah.
Were there no kids that were na weren't named after a saint? Was there not just like a Leroy or something? Like a
Perhaps this isn't a great indictment of my relative homogeneity of my grade school, but no, there was not a Leroy. No, there was a lot of, Timothy and Matthews and Bradleys, and I don't know if there's a Saint Bradley now that I
I was
think
going to
about
say, I mean,
it.
again, I defer to you based
But
on
like,
my
if
lack
you
of
didn't have a
demonstrated
saint that you wanted to do, because like maybe your saint was kind of controversial, like the one who cut off her breasts, that was not a popular.
Sure.
Yeah, sorry, Agnes.
Now, how many Agneses? What was the Agnes to Leroy ratio here? Because
Significantly,
I have never met an Agnes.
she was the principal.
Oh, jeez. I guess our principal's name was Hal, so I don't know if there's a Saint
Again,
Hal,
there's
but.
just two very, very parallel experiences being talked about here. And by parallel, I mean they do not cross. Did
Well,
you have Valentine's Day? I assume that you asked me this question as
I
an
did.
excuse to be able to tell your own story.
Well, it's not much of a story, but I was curious if they played I Don't Want to Be in Love by Good Charlotte as one of the songs for the Valentine's Day dances for like the rebellious kids who weren't, awkwardly not allowed to touch, but like shimmying nearby someone that they kind of had a crush on, and so they were acting like they hated. It sounds like that was not the case. That was
No,
not your
no, no.
experience.
Also, I'm like 20 years older than you. So, good Charlotte. No, John. No, none of that. None of that.
I feel like Good Charlotte has been around for a while. I
No.
don't know.
My
Okay.
main memory of celebrating my birthday in grade school was I had a roller skating birthday party where I had pink cake and cherry 7-Up. And I threw it up everywhere in front of my classmates, and it was humiliating.
No.
Yep, stomach bug, didn't know I had it until. Yep, so that happened. So my apathy towards this day can maybe be traced back to that moment. I believe that was also the last birthday party I had with anyone from school, so.
That's fair. Okay. I want it noted. Good Charlotte began in 1995.
Really?
I think it's reasonably possible. Their debut studio album was 2001, but they had
No,
multiple
this
demos and
is not.
EPs
We are.
before that. So you could have
I
been in
was
on
in
the.
college.
But
No.
you were in college on the East Coast. They're from Maryland.
Just no. None of this is true.
Right. I think we're gonna wrap up so
Yeah?
that
Yeah? You think we're
we
gonna
can
wrap up? Yeah. Wrap up this super compelling content.
We'll be back next week, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, next week we'll have had a few a few practices, and we'll be 2 days away. Well,
We'll
depending
have a
on when
few
you're
more
scheduled.
blurry iPhone pictures taken by Ryan
Yeah.
Divish to look at and dissect.
And we'll probably be a day or two away from the first
Some actual
games of spring
games,
training,
yeah.
which is, I mean,
We made it! We made it!
there have been few off seasons that I can imagine that were more just
Arduous, painful,
dreadful.
horrible, torturous. Did I say torture? More torture. Yeah, more torture. Like being stuffed into someone's backyard pizza oven? Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
It has been rough, but we are here. There will be baseball.
Yes.
Yes. And we're looking forward to being there with you for it. So, Kate, I'm looking forward to recapping games. I mean, that's what I think you and I did a lot of, especially when we first started here, and it's fun, man. It is
a good time. It is good. Even when the games are poor, experience of telling stories about them is fun. Talking to players is fun. Hopefully to do more of that this year. And baseball is fun. Baseball should be fun. So just please. Last year, my plea, every time it was like 11:11 on the clock, or, you know, I found a stray eyelash. Obviously, you wish on those. It was that the Mariners be good. I'm changing that this year. My entire off-season wish every time has been, please let the Mariners be fun.
I thought it was going to be, please let the Mariners just be better than the Angels.
Well, there's that. I mean, that's yours. I'm not going to encroach on your territory like that.
That's fair. I appreciate it.
But yeah, also, this is a side thing, but let's reenact the Mitch and Ryan. I'm willing to take Ryan on as my favorite. Let's go to Marination and we'll just like reenact their cute little bro date. That'll be fun.
I'm very down, especially because I'm now looking at a photo of Mitch Haniger flanked by Taylor Motter and Ben Gamel, and it is hilarious to just see him looking so kempt, relatively.
Oh, man. Yeah, he definitely looks like the one brother who didn't get his GED.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for sticking with us through this off season.
This is our last off season podcast, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. We're almost done with the 40 and 40 series on the site, which you can check out if you want to get familiar with the players and you know, the moves that have happened. And we're gonna have a lot of fun stuff ahead. Whether the team likes it or not.
We will have fun. That's our motto on the site this year. No matter how much you try to stop us, we will have fun.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Oh, you're hosting this episode. You close the show. You do the goodbye talk.
Absolutely. And you can get a head start on that garbage truck. until next week.